Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And in this part of the programme, we have another election 2016 candidate interview. Today we're joined by 63-year-old John McBride, who's standing in Douglas East. Good afternoon, John, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
For people who don't know you from Adam, tell us all a little bit about yourself, your background and things like that.
Yes, well, certainly. I was born on the Isle of Man, in fact, in Douglas East, and I grew up in Douglas East. Left school, went to college for a year, and then I became an apprentice mechanic, funnily enough, with Mulcriest Motors for quite a while. And then I, at the age of about 22, 23, I decided that wasn't really what I wanted to do full time. It's a great job as a hobby, but I wanted to really get into management. And I've also always been motivated more by helping people and by getting involved and making decisions. And I managed to get myself into management. I worked for quite a while on the island. I worked in the United States for a very short period. Came back to the island once again, and then moved off to just outside of London for a few years. Worked for the largest motor dealer group in the UK at the time. Learned quite a lot from them, and then I was tempted back to the island by a job running Corkill's VW Audi Porsche for 12 years, and I've learned quite a lot from that, really. I'm involved with the Manx Grand Prix Riders Association. I'm a former competitor. I'm a chairman of that. I was a past chairman of the Retail Motor Industry Federation on the island, and also I'm vice chairman of the Isle of Man ACU Centre Board, and also chairman of First Douglas Scout Group.
And which of those skills do you think would make you a good politician?
Well, I think it's the business approach, really. And I've always been an advocate, really, of not of a total business approach in politics, because I think you've really got to consider people and their needs, because more so than staff needs. But you really do need to have a business-like approach, and you've got to look at the cost as well as the benefit of everything that you do.
Some people might suggest that politicians can see the cost of everything but know the value of nothing.
I'd probably agree with that, but I don't think I fall into that category. As I say, I'm more of a people person. I really am, and I'm very altruistic, really. As long as I can remember, I've wanted to help people and, as I say, be involved and make decisions. And it's something which I've inherited, I've found recently, going back to my great-grandfather. So something which is seems to be a family trait.
So. All right. So you started your career as an apprentice mechanic, motor mechanic.
Yes.
So as far as Manx politics is concerned, do we need to have an oil change, you know, a new set of plugs, or is it a complete engine overhaul?
I think it's a complete engine overhaul, I'm afraid. It's getting to the stage where we've neglected it, and we haven't changed the oil, and we haven't maintained it, and now we're at the stage where really we're going to pay the price of that, and we have to really have a good clear out and install a new heart.
Well, yes. I mean, we heard today that the Chief Minister isn't going to stand again, so it is going to be a completely new administration next time, isn't it?
It is, yes. I mean, that's interesting. I think that whoever is the new Chief Minister will have a challenge, and I think whoever gets elected is going to have a big challenge. But there are answers. There are answers out there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. You know, I think we've got a lot going for us on the island. We've definitely got a lot going for us, and we've got obviously a great tourism offer, which I keep harping on about. But I think we're eventually starting to realise that. I know the government did a destination report, which basically addressed a lot of the things which I'd mentioned previously, which were creating a new frontage for Douglas. But also giving Douglas a heart back. It's become a dead town, and we need a vibrant culture if we're going to attract people here. Nobody's going to come here and invest if the town is dead. And, you know, Douglas really is the face of the island, East Douglas particularly so. We've got to really present a great face. We've got carbuncles all over the place. That promenade is an absolute disgrace. We've got bomb sites along the promenade. Lord Street is a disgrace. And really, if we're going to project an international image, which we are trying to do, you just wouldn't invest here. You wouldn't invest here.
You're clearly very passionate about it, and I like that. But you say that the island's got a great tourism future. Has it really? Why has the island got a great future?
I think it has, and particularly with Brexit. I think we've got opportunities coming along, and I think we've got to grab them. We've got to build the tourism offer. I mean, we've got TT, and we have the classic TT Manx Grand Prix. I hesitate to say Festival of Motorcycling, but they're the major events throughout the year. Well, yes, we have the Sub 100, which is quite good, but we need to start building other events less motorcycle related through the year.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, cycling is one thing, which I think is probably we could have a proper full international cycling week here, which we used to have. I don't know very much about cycling, so for all those cyclists out there who probably say, well, we never get a date, it's just an example.
We had a big cycling festival, was it this year or last year, didn't we?
We had a cycling, it was a mountain bike festival, I believe, that was quite good. But I think that was just the beginning, and I think that that could be worked on, and that could be expanded on to become...
But people who say that we've got a great tourism future also say that the thing that's stopping that is the cost of getting here.
Well, that's one of the things which has to be addressed.
How?
Well, I think that the steam packet really do have to have suitable vessels for plying their trade here, which means that they're going to be able to carry sufficient people to and from the island in a reasonable amount of time. And I'm not saying they should suddenly go out and buy a fleet of eight new vessels and this sort of thing, but they have to have vessels which will at least be reliable and be able to sail continuously to bring people in and out when they want to.
They're a private company. I mean, they could buy rowing boats if they wanted to.
Yeah, well, that's right. They are a private company, but we basically subsidise them by giving them that exclusive use of the link spans.
And they've got that well after your first 5 years as an MHK if you're elected. So, you know, you can't change the user agreement, can you? So how do you address it?
Well, we're going to have to, one way or the other. We're going to have to either call it in somewhere along the line. It's not been, as far as I know, it's not been decided yet, has it?
No, but I think it runs to, is it 2025, the current user agreement?
The current user agreement, yes.
But we can't wait until then, surely, to sort out our tourism trade, can we?
We can't, no. We can't wait. We can't wait 10 years to have the promenade done, either.
But this is the problem, you see. It's all very well saying, you know, we've got a great tourism future, but it costs too much to get here, so we need to sort that out. If you can't sort that out, if you can't make the airlines offer cheap flights over here, you can't sort it out, and therefore there's no future for tourism. You know, what I'm trying to get at is that what you're saying is great, but is it practical?
Of course it's practical. We can't just fall at every hurdle and just say, we'll give up and say, well, that's the end of it. We've got to find ways around it. And, you know, I'm not saying that I've got every answer, but we've got to have a clear direction of where we're going. And I believe that tourism is one direction which we really do need to go at. And we can't just say, there's nothing we can do about it because the steam packet have got it all sold up. We should have a seat on the board of the steam packet. We should be in the decision-making process with the steam packet.
And the only way to do that is for government to take it over.
Well, no. I mean, in return for the exclusive use of our landing stage and our £3.5 million development in Liverpool.
And that's just the start.
That's just the start. But we should have a say in how the steam packet is run in return for the business that we give them. They're a profitable organisation, and we're contributing, we're making them profitable, and we need to have a say in how it's run.
Okay, yeah, good luck with that. So you say that that Douglas looks shoddy, it looks run down.
Yes.
What could you do about that? I mean, what would you do, for example, with things like the Castle Mona?
The Castle Mona, which somehow, I think really, we've almost got to have a compulsory purchase on that. I don't think it's going anywhere. I just don't think it's going anywhere. We're going to sit here for the next 5 or 10 years and wait for it to deteriorate to the stage where it's going to be knocked down. And then yet another landmark hotel disappears from the Isle of Man. It's ridiculous. It really is. And if we're going to adopt the attitude that we're going to do nothing, we have no future. And there's no point in me standing, because if I'm going to sit here and have to put up with listening to people saying we can't do this and we can't do that, then I may as well not bother getting out of bed on the 22nd of September.
And you say you've cited Lord Street as a particular example of bomb sites, effectively.
It's a disgrace.
Yeah. But what can you do about that? You know, one presumes that people own the land. I know that government was trying to get rid of a lot of it, but they wanted certain conditions to be met before they were going to sell it off. Is that the problem? You know, should it just be allowed to, as an open market sale, and people can do what they like with it, pretty much?
No, it's somehow or other we've got to look at what we want on those sites, and we've got to go out and find people who will build, and we've got to make it absolutely attractive for them to do it.
Well, that means
we certainly did it with Marks and Spencer. We gave them a pound a year for their site.
Well, and that's the thing, yes. You know, should government be subsidising businesses that want to come along and build, say, a supermarket with a shopping mall or whatever on Lord Street? You know, would it be right for the taxpayer to subsidise that?
Well, it's doing nothing now, and what we're trying to do is get the economy moving. And if the government has got to make has got to create the environment for growth,
yeah,
and that's its job. That's what it should be doing. Okay. And if that means doing that sort of thing, then that's what they should be doing, because they can do it in the UK. That's what they'll do. Runcorn or somewhere like that will allocate land, and they'll make it so compelling for people for organisations to build properties there and enhance their area, that the Isle of Man gets left behind every time.
The UK, of course, can borrow money, and the Isle of Man government can't. So
yes.
That might mitigate against that, mightn't it?
Well, I don't see how it should, really, because it's not a case of borrowing money. It's a case of making things easing the path and making it possible.
All right. What do you think about the government? Do you think a lot of people think that we've got too much bureaucracy, we've got too many civil servants, too many middle managers? Have you got a point on that?
Yes, I do, really. I think that, we could say that we've got too many MHKs. I don't believe that, really, because I think at the moment we've got a council of ministers with 9 people. We do need some sort of opposition to them. As far as government goes, really, I mean, I know we've embraced zero-hours contracts, and the government seem to be employing a lot of people on zero-hours contracts. And I've spoken to a few people on them, and it appears that these people are working. They're doing the work of the full-time people who see themselves now as supervisory, and then that the management isn't dealing with the issue, and the part-time people get laid off after 12 months, and they start the whole process all over again. And we've got a group of people within government who aren't really able to perform to their best. So we do have a problem where we have more managers and not too many chiefs and not enough Indians,
right,
in that respect. As far as we keep talking about silo mentalities in government, and I think that we do have that, and Alan Bell tried to eliminate that at the start of the last administration, and it's just got nowhere. Mm-hmm. It's just got nowhere. And I mean, the very fact that we resurfaced the SLOC because the money would have been wasted otherwise. Well, how the heck would you waste nearly £500,000 by putting it back into government coffers?
Okay.
You know, it's just a strange attitude, a strange way of doing things. They've got to spend their budget.
What about the promenade? I mean, where did you stand on where the horse tram should go, say? And which of the plans did you support? The one for the Rolls-Royce scheme, where it was all going to be changed around fairly dramatically, or the less obvious plan where the horse trams were going to run down the side of the road? Which was your favourite?
Well, I think we have to do something which we can afford, and I don't think we can afford a £23 million redevelopment, unfortunately. I think the horse tram should be retained, and I think they should probably be at the side of the road. I can't see the sense of them running down the middle of the road. It does create congestion, and the promenade is one of our main thoroughfares through the town. So I think that we really are a good resurfacing job, repairing all of the potholes and what have you. And I think there's probably a lot of subsidence in the roads. We've got to sort that out. But we can't afford to spend £23 million. We just don't have that kind of money.
You'd like to see more diversity in the economy. All would-be politicians say that. But
yes.
How would you do it?
Well, again, it's creating the environment, and there's a lot of store put on information communication technology.
Yeah.
And now I know we're trying to create the environment for that, but it's a culture. We've got to attract that culture here. The likes of Silicon Valley in California didn't just happen. It happened because there were already people in UCLA who lived and worked in California. They liked the lifestyle, and they could socialise with people, like-minded people, and we have to create that environment. It's not going to be an easy process. There's a lot better cultures in various parts of the UK for this sort of thing, so people can socialise. It's not just about actually going to work. It's about the whole package of what you do after you finish work. How do you socialise? How do you play sports? And we have to, and people want to deal with like-minded people. So.
And can we do that, though? I mean, that's a great idea, but how do we do that? How do we encourage people to come over? Because, you know, do you put the sports and the out-of-work activities in first before you can attract the people, or do they come as a result of the people being here?
Again, it's creating an environment. I think we have to create that environment to get them here. We've got to make sure that we have what appeals to that type of person.
All right. It strikes me sometimes that politics as practiced here in our part of the world is very much a beauty contest, and that, you know, you're constantly at the behest of the people who've elected you, and you're constantly having to try and please the people who've elected you so that you'll get elected again. How easy will it be to make hard but essential decisions that are not necessarily popular?
It wouldn't be hard for me, because I've made hard, unpopular decisions before, but I don't think... I think that people will respect that as long as you keep them informed and tell them why you're doing it. It might not please them, but at least as long as they know the reasons that this is happening, I think that's one way of easing the problem. But we do have to make unpopular decisions, and I can see very, very shortly that we're going to have to increase the taxation rate. You know? And it's one of those things, it's not going to be popular, because it's going to affect the middle earners and the higher earners more so, obviously, than the poorer people. But unfortunately, it's a fact of life.
Okay.
And I know that won't even be popular within government, because we see ourselves as a low cost jurisdiction. But when the money starts to run out, you know, and we're going to have to do something sooner rather than later, because when the money is run out, there will be no money to earn to pay tax.
All right. So you're going to soak the rich. Where do you stand on the tax cap?
No, I wouldn't say no. I'm not talking about suddenly introducing 50% tax and that sort of thing. It's a question of doing a little now and spreading the burden. That's the key word, is spreading the burden.
What about the tax cap? Do you think it's worked? Do you think it's a good thing for the Isle of Man?
I don't think it's worked. No, I think it's sounded like a good idea, but I don't think it's worked as far as the island is concerned, because I think a lot of these people end up not paying tax, because they end up paying themselves from their company, so they don't actually claim a wage anyway, so a lot of them pay no tax anyway. So okay. I don't think it's something which attracts people here. They've got other ways of sorting out their tax affairs.
And what about the idea of putting up tax for, you say, middle and higher earners? Wouldn't that remove our competitiveness?
Well, it depends on what it still can be competitive with the UK, and the UK is now actually getting very close to us, isn't it? You know, it's almost as tax efficient to live in the UK as it is here anyway.
You're calling for greater efficiency in government. Where do you see inefficiencies at the moment in government?
Well, one of the things I was saying before is where we are employing people on contracts and bank work, and they're expected to do all the work, and we're employing people full-time who are supervising them and doing less work. So I think that's one of the areas we've got to look at.
Isn't part of the problem the fact that politicians in the Isle of Man, MHKs, and I can think of a number of them that you might level this criticism at, just seem unable to make a decision because they worry about how it's going to play out in public, wonder whether or not it's going to affect the chance of getting re-elected. So they find it difficult to make decisions and would rather pay an awful lot of money to external consultants to come in and look at a situation, come up with a report, and then they can debate the report rather than the actual doing the job kind of a thing. Do you think that there's enough doing and maybe too much talking?
There's not enough doing. It's a bit like they're playing some sort of bizarre theatrical production sometimes, and there's a lot of dancing around the handbags and a lot of kicking cans down the road and nothing getting done. And it annoys me immensely. It really annoys me immensely, because there's so many... what appear on the face of it to be good initiatives which have gone through Tim Wald, and nothing's materialised. In fact, there's legislation which has been passed, and departments ignore it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to do it, so they just ignore it. And there's no call to account for doing that.
You mentioned a first class and a timely health service. I think everybody would want that.
Yes.
But we've seen, you know, that the health service regularly overspends its budget. I think that you could probably double the budget of the health service and it would always find ways to spend the money.
Yes.
How do you actually improve things as far as the health service is
concerned?
I think
that's improving efficiencies and improving and eliminating waste, really. I think that's the biggest problem there. We're never going to be a centre of excellence as far as we're a general hospital. Yeah. Nobles is a general hospital. We're going to continue to rely on the major hospitals in the UK, and we've got to look at how we manage that. Are we going to continue to send more people to the UK and deal with broken arms, etc., in Nobles?
Increase efficiencies and reduce waste. I mean, those are great concepts, but how do you actually do it? Because people that are in the hospital now, who are running the hospital, would say, well, we do that already. We don't waste. We, you know, we've not got many inefficiencies that we can easily deal with.
Yes. Look, I don't know every... I spend a lot of time in hospital. I had a huge accident a few years ago. I spent a lot of time in the hospital, and I could sit there for days watching what was going on. And it seems to be more of a cultural thing than anything else. It's not. I don't think there's anything sinister going on behind the scenes. I think it's just a cultural thing, and it needs a cultural change, and people to look at the inefficiencies themselves. They make themselves aware of it and do something about it. I don't think it's something where somebody's going to come along and wave a magic wand. And one thing I was advocating previously was Kaizen, which is the Japanese art of continuous improvement.
Yes.
And that is something.
Oh, this is like the Toyota production
system.
That's
right, yes, yes. Well, that can work wonders in an organisation. And I think that's something which really should be adopted throughout government, to be fair.
I agree.
And that would make so many changes, and we would have a much better health service. In fact, a much better service is full stop.
I think the principle of that is that anything that doesn't positively affect the customer is cut out of the business. So anything that's there just for the sake of the business is cut out.
Yes.
It's got to actually improve the outcome,
that's right.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great system. It's brutal, though. I mean, this has been brought in by various companies across the UK, I think British Aerospace and others, and it can be brutal. It can lead to hundreds of thousands of people losing their jobs.
Yes, well, we won't have hundreds of thousands of people on the Isle of Man losing their jobs, but because I think a lot of the... I think a lot of good people working within government, and I'm not saying we're overburdened with public sector workers. The work still has to be done.
Mm.
But I think we have to look at how they are being utilised.
You say that you'd like to see meaningful and well-paid employment opportunities for young people.
Yes.
Aren't the opportunities there?
Well, that is a consequence of growing the economy, that we would be able to offer better opportunities to young people. I think, unfortunately, the whole employment landscape is changing throughout the world. It's not just the Isle of Man, unfortunately. We've embraced zero-hours contracts within government. A lot of businesses are using them now. And I think that is... It's just the way things are going.
You've been a self-improver your whole career from the sound of it. Do you not think that we sometimes raise young people's expectations by saying, you know, do your GCSEs, do your A-levels, go to university, go away for 3 years and come back as a rocket scientist? Mm. Should we not be saying to people, leave school at 16, go and work in a shop and learn the job, and within 5 years you might be an assistant manager and work your way up through the system that way?
Well, I think that's probably a good point, because I think... We're not a classless society, no matter what anybody tries to think. We look down on people who serve us, and I think that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong, because if you get good service anywhere, you appreciate it, you remember it, and it's an art. It's an art, and it's a skill. It's not something which sometimes it can't be taught to some people, but I think it's something which it should be appreciated for what it is, and I think that people should be encouraged to try it.
And not many people do, you know, because I've got a bit of experience of this. People want to be rocket scientists.
Yes.
No, nothing wrong with that. I understand that. They want to be airline pilots or whatever, rather than be coffee shop assistants.
Yes.
But, you know, so it's almost looked down on by the person who's looking for work.
Yes.
Not the rest
of
us.
But I think you've all got to start somewhere. And I think that if you can learn service, you can progress to supervisor, to manager.
Yeah.
You could suddenly find yourself in a position to be able to fund yourself through airline school or something like that. You know,
sure.
it's it's a case, it is continuous and self-improvement.
I think you've got concerns about the disadvantaged and vulnerable in society. Tell me a little bit about that and whether or not you think the legislation we've got works.
Well, I know that they've talked about, or the government have talked about, introducing better disabled rights, better rights for old people, etc., etc. But it's been spread over a long period of time. I mean, a lot of people would be dead by the time we get to the point where we're giving people equal rights. Mm-hmm. Disabled, you can actually turn somebody down for work or for a job because they're disabled on the Isle of Man, and that's disgraceful.
All right.
That's I mean, they have other recourse, but they can't actually turn around and say, well, he's turned me down because I'm disabled. And for age, it's very, very similar. I shouldn't have to give you my age if I'm coming in for a job interview, really.
Sure.
Because
you've got 10 seconds left because we're out of time, but tell the people of Douglas East why they should vote for you.
Well, if they vote for me, and I promise I'll stand up for them and I'll serve them without flinching. And the only thing I will say is, whatever you do, be selfish. Do vote for the person you believe will serve you best.
All right. Candidate for Douglas East, John McBride, thanks for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.